If y'all really screw up, we're going to finish Sermon on the Mount this morning. Turn to Matthew chapter 7. We're going to pick up in verse 24. What we're going to see this morning, as we finish up the Sermon on the Mount, this is how Jesus concludes. We've spent, I don't know how many weeks studying this, but Jesus has presented this sermon, presented this lesson, starting with the parables and then proceeding forth with the other things we heard. And, I think a short summary without specifics on the Sermon on the Mount is these are the kind of people you've got to be, and it involves more than a strict literal interpretation of the law. It's going to include your heart. Best example of that would be murder is not just the outright act. It's just as wrong to, I'd do that if I could get away with it. You know, it's not the literal. Then we went through several things where Jesus is telling them, unless your righteousness surpasses that of the scribes and the Pharisees, you don't have much hope. And then we get down to verse 24. Therefore, whoever hears these sayings of mine and does them, I will liken him to a wise man who built his house on the rock. And the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it did not fall, for it was founded on the rock. But everyone who hears these sayings of mine and does not do them will be like a foolish man who built his house on the sand, and the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, and it fell, and great was its fall. If I had just planned ahead well enough, I would now have the small children in here, and they'd sing a song to you, so you would get the real point of this. This is the way Jesus concludes this. What's he saying? As he's done many times, there's two things presented here. There's a wise man and a foolish man. And if you don't, here comes curses. If you have not priced housing lately, I wouldn't advise you do it because it's going to be sticker shock. It's just incredible, the pricing right now and just the cost of building materials. But even if you were just going to, in the good old days and build a house, would you want to build one on a rock foundation who was able to withstand stuff, or would you want to build it on shifting sand? Come on, I'm throwing you softballs now. Come on. Which would you want?
Robert, a lot of people are dealing with that same issue every day, where they build beds of sand, and, there's a house in our neighborhood that's just about to fall into the reservoir.
Wow.
Because they didn't build it on the road.
Yeah. There is a large vein of Yazoo clay that runs through Clinton. It's probably in some places maybe 75 feet wide. But on either side of that deposit, everything's fine. But for those houses and streets that are built on that Yazoo clay, you can go by there, in dry season, and they're sitting down in a hole, and you go by there in the wet season, and all of a sudden they're sitting up on a hill. Because that's what the Yazoo sand, the Yazoo clay does. It contracts and then it expands depending upon, what the weather's like. I don't know if y'all remember when Leonard and Lana White first moved here. It was either their first or second house that they had in Clinton. Their entire, I don't know if it was living room, dining room, or both, but they actually had to go into the middle of the house and tear out the concrete foundation, the slab, and you could stand in their house, you know, there's a hole down there because they had to get down to where the problem was. And these seem like two easy options that are presented here. You can be on a solid foundation, or you can be on something that doesn't give you any support whatsoever. Those are easy options, right? What's the difficulty? It seems like everybody would do that. What's the difficulty here? What's the X factor? Men. You know, that's the X factor. Our desires. Yes, the preacher's here. Bill's preaching this morning. He just walked in. We were watching for him. That's the X factor. And if you think about it, that's a lot of what Jesus has kind of, the underpinnings of a lot of the Sermon on the Mount. Many times, don't you know or observe the right thing? You know, there are some things you have to think about. Is that right or is that wrong? You know, maybe kind of stay away from those because you're not sure. But many times we know what's right and we know what's wrong, but it's, in Erica's apt description, it's men's desires to do what they want to do. Or what a deal. You know, that one's $100,000. And that other one I was looking at is $400,000. You live in it 6 months. I know why I got such a deal. What a deal. You know, your inflection of your voice changes. Think about later in life. Think about if we appear before the judgment seat and we have to give account for these things. It's kind of the buildup of the Sermon on the Mount. And in verse 28, "And so it was, when Jesus had ended these sayings, that the people were astonished at his teaching. For he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes." So we get just a really, really brief glimpse at the audience's response. You know, if you think through it, there hadn't been anything starting back in chapter 5 and verse 3. I was looking to make sure. I don't have anything but red for, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 pages. It's just Jesus speaking, and then at the end we get this glimpse of the audience. Would you say they were receptive, not receptive, or we don't know yet? Or what was their reaction? And it tells us what was different about it. He says, he taught them as one having authority. Okay, that's one thing. But then they compare it, and not as the scribes.
They expected these scribes that were constantly copying the scriptures, and then other people coming to the temple to tell them things.
Let's do you first. When you were studying for a test, whenever that might have been, could have been high school, could have been college, could have been, you know, last week you had to take some sort of a certification test. were you one of the people that I was in the group that if I had, you know, 30 things I needed to know, I might go through 10 legal pads. I would write it. I would write it. I would write it. And that kind of, that was a method for me by which it kind of got, you know, in my brain, kind of like a blueprint. It was stuck there. That's a large portion of what the scribes did every day. They would write the law. They would copy the law. So just as a byproduct of that, they would know what it said. So what was the difference? What do you think the difference was as he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes? What's the difference in that? Was Jesus teaching, you know, something that wasn't in the law? One good example so you see what we're talking about. Matthew chapter 5, verse 43. Somebody read that. 43 and 44. I think this is just a concrete example. Many others. But what does that say? And it was like, you shall not murder. That's what the black letter law said. But somebody with authority, somebody that was the author, let me tell you what that really means. I can remember this just like it happened yesterday, and believe me, it wasn't yesterday. Probably the fifth class that we had in a law school class called torts. A tort is just misfeasance. It's a negligence class. Basically, you study. And the broad definition of negligence is someone that does something or leaves something undone that a reasonable man would do or not do under like or similar circumstances. Okay. Then once we got that definition, okay, I can still say it to this day pretty much. But then we started reading cases. And that's a weird way, but what you would do in law school most time is you would read a case that a Supreme Court somewhere had decided. And there would be facts and law and a decision in there. That's how you would start to see how things work. And what I found out real quickly when we started reading the cases is most time my inclination as to what the result should have been was wrong. And I found out I just wasn't a reasonable man. That was the only conclusion I could draw. But later it starts to fit together. But you start to see those little pieces come together. And the crowd says were astonished. Some translations say they were amazed at his teaching because he taught them as one having authority and not as the scribes. And I think that's a good way for Matthew to end up this section, because he is telling us, or telling the audience, telling the readers, that the people got it. The people got that he was one having authority. The people got that he was a little bit different, in a good way. And then the question that's left with us, that's left hanging out there, is do we get that same message? Are we wowed by what he taught? Remember, he's writing primarily to a Jewish audience to show them that Jesus was the real deal. By his lineage, I can't remember how many times we saw that regarding his birth and some factors related to his early childhood, that angels galore appeared to people. Hey, she's with child, it's okay. Hey, she's with child, it's okay. Hey, don't go there. Go to Egypt. There's problems. Hey, it's okay now. You can leave Egypt. It makes that indelible impression, and then after we get this long sermon, the crowd gets that point. It's driven home again. Okay. Any questions, comments, things you want to say about the Sermon on the Mount? Otherwise, I mean, I really haven't been intentionally taking this long because I can't wait to get to the next part. Okay. All right. Now, beginning in verse 8, chapter 8. Again, I want to plant this seed in your head to not just sit and read the words on a page. Look at the organization. You know, if you've ever had to put together a proposal to try and win a bid on a contract, if you have ever had to put together a resume for a job that you really wanted, if you have ever had to write an article that you're going to present to another group of your peers, you take a little bit of care in the way that you write that, because the content is important. The way it flows is important. And we're going to start the next leg of Matthew really setting that hook that this Jesus I'm telling you about is the real deal. He is the Messiah. Okay? So just real briefly, in chapter 8, what does he start talking about? Just in general. Okay, but
miracles.
There's several that are just boom, 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 boom. Not even spend a lot of time on them. It's just, hey, this happened. You know, and if somebody with authority, not only teaching, but now let's look at this other kind of authority that he has. We move from the spoken word to now actions. And remember, he told us the wise man takes certain kind of actions. The foolish man is going to take certain kind of actions, but, you know, they're the wrong kind. So now that he can sit and talk a good game, is he the real deal? Okay, chapter 8, verse 1. When he had come down from the mountain, what mountain? Where he's just been on the Sermon on the Mount. So immediately following this, when he had come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. And behold, a leper came and worshiped him. Stop there for a minute. This is another little glimpse of how did the people react to his teaching. And there's going to be, you know, something else tied to it. And behold, a leper came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, wow, that's powerful, isn't it? Just that by itself. Lord, if you are willing, you can make me clean. Then Jesus put out his hand. What did he do? Touch a leper? Then Jesus put out his hand and touched him, saying, I am willing, be cleansed. And 6 months later, after medical treatment, immediately his leprosy was cleansed. And Jesus said to him, see that you tell no one, but go your way, show yourself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded as a testimony to them. Now, you start to see in the organization that that was a question. It came out wrong out of my mouth. Do you start to see the organization that's here as Matthew is marching us through? This Jesus really is Messiah material. He really is the Son of God. There may have been, it says as soon as he came down, this leper came to him. It may have been chronologically that's what happened. But there may have been some other events. But let's start with somebody that's supposed to be an outcast of society. I don't think that should be lost on us, that somebody that other people would shun is one of the first people that we're told approached him, called him Lord. And what does it mean when he says, if you are willing, you can make me clean? What does that whole statement just say? No question that he could. What would that be tied to, the important word that we just read at the very end?
Authority.
You can. You can. Again, these people get the point. And Jesus, I've got a heading at the beginning of this section that talks about the compassion of Jesus. Now, I have seen a movie producer who, what do you call the people that write the scripts? The screenplay, whatever. Whoever it is that write the scripts. I've seen a little vignette of this before on the Sermon on the Mount. And I don't know if it's correct or not, but I kind of like the way I saw it. The man that approached him being a leper was, all in a flowing cloak and covered his hands, had a hood over him, so you really couldn't see. And that's the way he was able to conceal himself in the crowd. You couldn't see that. And there is all different kinds of leprosy. There's dry leprosy, all different kinds, different stages. I don't know that from just this wording that we know what he had. But it was surprising to me too, the leper's there. And then the leper, lepers were under strict rules not to approach people. They knew to stay away. But the boldness, and I think just, you got to kind of allow me a little leeway because I read so many things into this. The burning desire that leper had to have to be cleansed. And he could do that by coming in contact with the Messiah. Where are we on that scale? Yeah. We're not lepers, but, you know, do we have that burning desire to be cleansed, to come in contact with the Savior? That's not the lesson, but it's a lesson for us to get there. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. You know, don't forget that as well. The law still required that. Yeah. Go present yourself to the priest, offer the gift that Moses commanded. Yeah. Okay, now so we get a leper cleansed. Bill? And then we don't go to the priest and we don't do the blah, 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 but it doesn't stop with that. There are things for us to do, okay? Yeah. There'd be somebody on the microphone. Hey, y'all, did y'all see what I did? Yeah.
He wasn't doing it for material gain or anything. He was doing it to prove his point.
Yeah. My phone would be blowing up with YouTube notifications. You know. And we'd read in the newspaper tomorrow, viral. 4,327,000 people have viewed this in the last 6 hours. You need to see this, okay? All right, verse 5. Where are we going next, Matthew? What are we going to do next? Now when Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him. Okay, now, he just had a leper come. Who's the next introduced to us? A Gentile? Also, a centurion, a military person. So who's he? Roman. What's the situation right now with Jerusalem and Rome? Who's in control? Okay. But wait a minute. Wouldn't the centurion who's in control send somebody to Jesus and say, get over here to me? I have authority. You know, no, no, no. It's kind of flipped here a little bit. Now, when Jesus had entered Capernaum, a centurion came to him, pleading with him, saying, Lord, my servant is lying at home paralyzed, dreadfully tormented. And Jesus said to him, I will come and heal him. The centurion answered and said, Lord, I am not worthy that you should come under my roof, but only speak a word and my servant will be healed. For I also am a man under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to this one, go, and he goes. And to another, come, and he comes. And to my servant, do this, and he does it. I love that part. This guy knows his place. He knows his authority. If I tell somebody to go stand in the corner and stack marbles up, they'll do it. Okay? When Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to those who followed, remember verse 1 said when he came down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him. Now he's going on to Capernaum and there's still people following him. Jesus heard it, he marveled and said to those who followed, assuredly I say to you, I have not found such great faith, not even in Israel. And I say to you that many will come from east and west and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. But the sons of the kingdom will be cast out into outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then Jesus said to the centurion, "Go your way, and as you have believed, so it will be done for you." And his servant was healed that same hour. Why would Matthew put this in here? What does it show us? What does it mean to you?
Jews aren't the only ones.
Okay, that's a very important thing that's missed. I had to read this maybe 10 times through the years where I picked up on that tidbit, because I got so lost in the centurion, you know, coming to him. And just every time I've read it, I mean, it's the same reaction. When I tell people to do stuff, they do it. You know, I kind of get sidetracked on that just a little bit.
Robert, this guy may be on an ego trip. He's not the A-team. The A-team is in Jerusalem, way down there away from where he is. He's up on the northern end of the Sea of Galilee, so Pilate couldn't find this guy. I mean, you know, he's that far remote, but it illustrates how a person that is in such authority, you know, has been hearing all this stuff. I don't think he could have done this in Jerusalem. I think they would.
Yeah.
If that were the case,
he was probably a big fish in a little pond.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't have one of these plum outposts, more than likely. It's not like you're going to be stationed in Honolulu in the military. No, we're going to send you to Antarctica. You know, we got things there to guard too. But what is the centurion? A Roman, a Gentile. What is his assessment of Jesus?
Whatever he's heard about, he believes that he hears that he has some sort of authority from the God of the Israelites, because he says, you know, he compares himself to one that there's somebody over me. I've got a lot of authority, but there's somebody over me, and he's comparing.
Can to make sure you get the point Sam made about if he had maybe been in Jerusalem and other Romans had observed this, he probably would have gotten a lot of trouble. Can you imagine a Roman soldier under Caesar's authority going up to a Jew and calling him Lord? Yeah. Let that sink in a minute. No.
They would tell
them. And isn't that the point that he made? You know, I have people that if I tell them what to do and not to do, they do it. But there's something different about this Jesus guy. And it doesn't hit us like it would them. A Jewish audience hearing that a Roman centurion goes to Jesus and calls him Lord. Eric.
The centurion does not look at Jesus and say, "You will come to my house immediately." He just says, "I've got a sick servant." And Jesus says, "I will go."
I'll do it.
He hasn't even asked him anything yet. And Jesus says, "I will go." And then he says, "No,
You don't need to.
I'm not worthy to have you come. Yeah, I mean, that's just, Jesus is always willing to heal. Yeah. Still today.
You have to really stop and parse some of this out. When the Roman centurion approaches Jesus, I got a problem. A servant's paralyzed, and Jesus says, I will come. I get this weird thing in my head of a cartoon character where the feet are up in the air, you know, going 90 miles an hour. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, let's go. He says, no. You don't need to do that. And that's where he goes off on this. I understand the concept of people in authority telling other people to do stuff. Elizabeth? And here's my $50. Is there some way I can get a little figurine of you, and I'll take that to the house? You know, Erica.
Both men came with humble spirits.
Yes.
And I think that's what keeps you from the today. If that was rebuilding God, and I don't know if you talk about it, but we all need to go to God with a bunch of bowed heads and humble hearts. You know, asking God and knowing that He will do it. But it still is up to His choice if we have to approach Him in the right way. Because He could still open up.
Yeah.
But He didn't. But through this example, too, He showed that the door for the Gentiles, us, was able to be saved. That at first, if you wasn't a Jew, you wasn't going to be saved. That wasn't in the plan. But since they rejected Jesus, God said, I'm going to take it to some other people, which allowed us today to be Christians and be able to be saved.
And how basic, but so ultimately important that we get the message that we've got to see whatever problem we have, whatever position of power we have, whatever our attitude is about ourselves. Buddy, you need to shelve that and recognize that Jesus is Lord. You are in control. You have the power. I will submit my will to yours. And you need to do that. And this is not, is it Jairus that has the daughter, you know, that we read about other times. This is a servant of his. And I think maybe it shows something about the character of the centurion that, you know, he's concerned enough about that individual. I just can't imagine the attitude, the good attitude that servant, that centurion had to have to, in man's eye, lower himself and go to a Jew to ask for help. The Jews that are here, they get that. Okay? And Jesus says, Mark verse 11, so you can go back and look at it later if you haven't, because Jesus is telling, I haven't found faith like this around here. And I say to you that many will come from east and west and will sit down with Abraham and Isaac. That's a foretelling. And then when Jesus says, go your way, just as you have believed, it has been done. And when was the servant healed? Same hour. Again. one of those nature characteristics of a miracle. Yeah. Well, you know, the that's kind of, you know, when the centurion said, if I tell somebody to do something, they're going to do it. So here's his belief in Jesus. Jesus says, it's done. Yes, sir. Thank you. There's a lot of lessons with the leper and the centurion. But, you know, the Jews may be sitting there. Matthew's wanting to make sure they don't feel left out. So far, we've got outcasts coming. Lepers and centurions, verse 14. Now when Jesus had come into Peter's house. All right, now we're getting somewhere. He saw his wife's mother lying sick with a fever. So he touched her hand. And the fever left her, and she arose and served them. Just, you got to put it together a little bit. We're not told what malady she had, but you have to, and you can readily imply she wasn't feeling real good, whatever was going on, because when the fever left her, then she was able to get up. But by what method did Jesus use to make her fever leave? Touched her. That's all that is said. It's not even that somebody asked him to do anything. It's just, she had a problem, he saw it, he touched her, it was done.
Not that he saw it, he knew what
she did. Yeah. And then we get this, then summation. Verse 16, when evening had come, they brought to him many who were demon-possessed. And he cast out the spirits with a word and healed all who were sick, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, he himself took our infirmities and bore our sicknesses. So again, Matthew takes prophecy and says, do you get it? Do you get it? Do you get it? This is the guy we've been hearing about. Here it is again. And just in very summary fashion, when he's there in Capernaum, you know, people start bringing other people that have problems. It talks about demon possession, sicknesses. And it's just, do you get this now? He talked as one that having authority. He cast, he makes a leper cleansed. From a distance, he heals a person that's paralyzed at a request from a centurion. Walks into Peter's house. The mother-in-law is not feeling well. With the touch, he heals her. And then it's like, oh, and by the way, many other people came to him. You know, John 20, 31, 32, right in that area, after John goes through the seven specific miracles that he writes, he ends up that books. Many other things are written that I'm not recording here, but these are written that you might believe. Okay. We picked a few here. I'll tell Philip if he doesn't know. Next week is the beginning of the next quarter. Philip is going to teach, but Philip ain't going to teach next week because Brent and Leah are going to be here, and Brent is going to teach the class and preach next week. So I'll tell Philip, it'll be one more week. Thank y'all.